So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
He's now on a second power bomb on the Rock. Batista destroying the Rock here. Flair stomping him at Mick Foley. And the Intercontinental Champion Randy Orton enjoying the handiwork. The three members of Evolution have just destroyed the Rock and Sock connection before Sunday's WrestleMania.
Oh my gosh, Rock and Sock, this is your life.
The Evolution is a mystery.
That payback's gonna be painful at WrestleMania. WrestleMania 20, this Sunday on pay-per-view. King, if you can believe it, the biggest WrestleMania in the history of the WWE.
So many great matches, so many championships, and this match at WrestleMania 20.
Look, 12 matches, over 4 hours. The destruction done by Evolution of the Rock and Sock Connection. Can the Rock and Sock Connection regroup before the biggest WrestleMania in history? And this is Sunday, where it all begins again. WrestleMania on pay-per-view.
It's like we just can't help ourselves. Cause we don't know how to back down. To the streets, we were called out into the towns. Show me the arms aloft, every eye trained on.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting with you for another week of Review Away as we count down the final couple of reviews before WrestleMania 28 is Mania Month. And this is show number 3 of Mania Month, Wei.
3 of 4 leading up until WrestleMania. And of course, this year we're not just reviewing WrestleMania pay-per-views themselves. We are reviewing the go-home Raws to those pay-per-views.
Which I enjoy doing a lot more. I really like watching the Raws because I can remember pretty much the meat and potatoes of a pay-per-view like WrestleMania, but I kind of like watching that Monday of their big last-minute sell job to get you enticed into WrestleMania.
Absolutely. I mean, not only that, but I feel like sometimes we do the pay-per-views that we review an injustice because we aren't necessarily in tune with the storylines that are heading into the shows at the time. And if you're missing the build-up and the setup, and you're just getting the climax, it's not very fair to the product. So I'm happy to watch these shorter episodes.
Yes, that is another great part, is that when it's like, you know, we're just a day or two away from recording the review, and I haven't watched it yet,
yeah,
much easier to get myself up for a 90-minute show, hour 40 when you take out the commercials,
yeah,
versus a 4-hour pay-per-view, which is what we will be reviewing next week.
That's right. But as such, I think we should note that I don't know about you, John, but like when I watch a go-home show, I don't necessarily critique it in the same way I would another pay-per-view. I mean, I'm not watching these shows for their match quality. I mean, the matches are really nothing to
leave it with. Am I excited to review this WrestleMania next week? And with WrestleMania 2000, I was after watching that Raw. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that Raw in terms of what the goal of that show is. That should be the goal of your television show, whether it be selling you on a pay-per-view or back in the day to go to the house show. I mean, that was the job of television. It was a commercial for what you're going to pay for. It's like Twitter. Twitter is a commercial to hopefully send you somewhere else.
Yes, and hopefully to send you to pay for something else. But it's not so much that these days. And I have to say, after watching this episode of Raw, I don't know if that was the intent either. I mean, in recent years, in the current era, at least in the current, since the Attitude era, it's really been a balance between drawing money for a potential pay-per-view and also ratings. So when it comes to go-home show, what do you value more? Do you value, the potential people that will pay to watch your next show, or do you cash in and hope to get the biggest spike in ratings if those two things are different?
I completely think ratings are overblown. Everyone thinks that, you know, you do a good rating one week, it means money. Everybody knows you do not sell advertising based on a quarter hour or one solid week. And for the WWE, they have a flat deal with the USA Network, where the USA Network takes in the money for their ad inventory, and WWE is paid a flat fee. So that argument for WWE is kind of nil. Now, obviously, you want to keep your numbers strong so that the USA Network values you. Yeah. That is obvious. You want to keep numbers strong and represent yourself. That being said, if the WWE does 5 million viewers for the go-home Raw, or they do 20 million viewers for the go-home Raw, all it is impressions. I mean, WWE will hit a record if they get 1.3 million buys. If they get 20% of the average Raw, that will be the biggest show in their history.
Yeah.
20%. Mm-hmm. So a giant number doesn't always necessarily mean those people are going to be watching your pay-per-view.
Right.
1.5 million watch Impact every week, and 8,000 spend money on it.
Yeah, so it's not so much about how many people are watching your show, but how many people are willing to pay for your next show.
I'd much rather have 4 million and give them a solid show that gives them some kind of cliffhanger or some incentive to buy my pay-per-view, and I get a higher percentage of those 4 million versus 35 million, and at the end of it, they're like, I'll tune in next week, find out what happened at WrestleMania. Hmm. Let's get into this. Monday, March the 8th, 2004, the eve of my birthday.
Yes, that's
where
right.
I was turning 20 that year.
The eve of your 20th birthday. Well,
I spent this Monday at O'Grady's.
As expected, absolutely.
And we didn't know each other at this point.
No, this was not.
Oh, this was a year before we met. I keep forgetting. We met in second year, didn't we?
I was actually in a class with you in first year.
Yeah, I told you. I don't remember this. History through film.
Yeah.
I was sitting in the back with Daniel Zayants and Diana Earle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I wasn't really friends with you guys. I was just, you know, a loner.
I wish so much that one of those weeks in History Through Film, we watched, like, Beyond the Mat or something, because I would have said something stupid in relation to wrestling, and maybe that would have been the branch that you would have seized upon and said, hey, I watch wrestling.
I don't know if Beyond the Mat fits in the curriculum with Schindler's List and what was this?
We were watching all those propaganda films like they aired like during World War II.
Yeah.
I remember watching one about Disney movies and how they just corrupt you with these subtle messages.
That was our sociology class.
Oh, was it? With Judith Gold? Golden?
Some, yeah, Jane, it doesn't matter. Anyway, the eve, how did you celebrate your actual 20th birthday?
Oh, Jesus. I think I had a rockin' party with a bunch of my friends at Swish LA.
A rockin' party.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was a... I remember that birthday sucked because I had just broken up with a girl who I dated for like 2 years. And
you have the worst luck on, like, special occasions. I mean, I know, like, New Year's are a touchy spot for you, but your birthdays as well.
Well, this was a holdover from a bad New Year's into a breakup. So it was a wonderful first couple of months of 2004, but
gotcha.
Who cares? I was going to WrestleMania that year.
Yes.
It all evens out.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, I remember that birthday was this girl... I was like, hey, are you going to come to my birthday party? And she's like, of course, I wouldn't miss your birthday party.
Uh-huh.
No-showed the birthday party.
No-showed your birthday party?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Rude. But it doesn't matter because you were going to WrestleMania, and so you, while watching this episode of Raw, you probably had a different set of expectations because not only were you paying for the show, you were driving down to this show.
Yes. I was planning because... My two friends, Paul and Brad being the one who will join us next week here in our studio, they were the ones, I think, they were the ones that really wanted to go to WrestleMania. And I was like, well, sure, I'll go. I was like, New York City, we're not going to go to WrestleMania. But my friend, because this was huge demand and very small arena, so I said, sure, we'll go, not thinking we'd get tickets. But my buddy Neil got online, and he was just a master at Ticketmaster and getting tickets.
Ticketmaster.
So yes. He got us 3 tickets, and in exchange, he wanted us to buy him a newly released iPod that was only available in the States at this time and smuggle it back to Canada. So we're like, sure.
Okay, that's no problem. So he bought you guys tickets.
He said, I'll get you guys these tickets. Not buying them, but he would go online at the on sale on that, whatever morning it was. He would get us tickets.
Yeah.
And in exchange, you have to buy me an iPod when I'm down there. He would give us the money to buy the iPod, and we just have to bring it back to Canada.
Why wouldn't he do it himself?
Well, he wasn't going to travel all the way to New York.
Oh, I thought he was going to go to the show.
No. Oh, he was just getting three tickets for me.
This was just your Ticketmaster hookup.
Yeah, this was our Ticketmaster hookup. He's I'll get the tickets, and I'll give you money, and just bring me back an iPod.
Well, that's a good exchange.
I was like, fine, no problem. So, and then we got the tickets. So. And that was when they were big fans. That was at the on sale, like in the fall.
Yeah.
By the time WrestleMania came around, they were falling out of it.
Sure.
So... they were still going to WrestleMania.
Well, obviously, they may have watched the show, and maybe that had something to do with
their
interest falling.
So it's in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and let's set this up, because the week prior was kind of their big angle, which I think should have been shot on this show. It was where they had been doing this Randy Orton-Mick Foley feud, and it was going to be set up to be a handicap match at WrestleMania, and Mick Foley was going to pick a partner, but... the name of the partner had kind of... everyone knew it was going to be The Rock, but it built up to this closing segment where Evolution is in the ring. They're taunting Mick Foley, and had been... I think they attacked him or something. And Orton's like, okay, we all know who your tag team partner is going to be. Get him on the phone or whatever. And instead, The Rock was there and came out, giant pop, and they lay out Evolution, and that was the big... the whole place went nuts, and then they had another week to kill.
Yeah, but in hindsight, you want to get at least 2 weeks of
I guess
momentum.
So. I guess so. But this was a this is kind of what we're running into this week, where tonight's show was, well, we've got The Rock. What can we do with him?
Uh-huh.
And this was not The Rock concert, but This Is Your Life 2.
This Is Your Life, the Mick Foley version of This Is Your Life, presented by The Rock.
Yep. So Ross starts off cold with a casket in the ring and the ominous music. And Jerry Lawler is asking, whose casket could this be? Who could it be? The Undertaker is returning in 6 days after 6 months away. Who could it be?
Maybe The Rock's.
And then they cut to the opening, the Union Underground Raw opening.
I like this song. I think it's good.
I always associate this theme, though, with, like, a downtime when this show was at a low point after the Attitude Era. So I think with me, when it comes to songs and wrestling, I equate the song with what it's associated with.
Okay.
If it was a shitty WrestleMania, like the... that's not true. That WrestleMania with Limp Bizkit, I hated that song. The one with, not
19?
Yes, 19. Yeah. Whatever that song was.
My Way. Wasn't?
No, that was the good one.
Crack Addict.
Crack Addict.
Crack Addict.
That goes against my theory, because I hated that song, and that was a very good WrestleMania. Kane is watching in the back and fuming, and comes out, and he's cautious. He knocks over the casket, and there's an urn inside of the casket, and he starts destroying everything, throws the casket to the floor, and there's dirt all over the ring. They were just asking for guys to get, like, staff or something here.
E. coli infections.
I hope that they were going to replace the mat here.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You got blood on that thing. You got
why not?
All sorts
blood
of sweat.
And dirt and open wounds and no drug testing at this point.
Uh-huh.
What could go wrong? Kane laughs at the urn being sent and says that the Undertaker's legacy, his streak, and his life are coming to an end at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, it's back to the grave for you for good this time. What a poem.
It's not supposed to rhyme.
Well, it was supposed to have some rhythm to it.
Listen, the Kane promo is a Kane promo, and I don't judge it by any other value that I judge a typical promo. I look back at a segment like this, and this was eight years ago.
Yeah.
And I look back at these segments, and I wonder, 20 years from now, when both of these men, Taker and Kane, have both retired, how will we look back at segments like these? Because it's just, I find it so interesting that fans can accept and embrace these supernatural horror angles in the middle of otherwise, you know, a show that's pretty much rooted in reality and real characters, especially at this time. Yet, show opens up with a fucking casket in the ring and flames and shit, and people just don't bat an eye. They just accept this.
It's a real fine line because The Undertaker has a lot of these kind of angles that never feel as ridiculous as the Kane angles, where I think they decide to take more liberties with his character as this monster, and it gets into that territory where there is no way you can take this seriously. A man lighting Jim Ross on fire. There's a million of these angles Kane has been involved with.
If this was a heavily produced Hollywood feature, like a Freddy Krueger movie with with the production value and like the medium of editing and everything, you
not in a live arena setting,
not in a Broadway show, not in any type of live arena. It's going to come across as camp.
And even The Undertaker, I mean, he's really kind of gotten away from, you know, the crazy, you know, throwing fire
aside from the entrance. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Undertaker to me works in the context. Kane quite often does not, and he's unintentional comedy for a lot of the time, and that's the performer I think that pulls off. He will say no to anything that they present because he's done every ridiculous angle imaginable.
You mean Kane?
Yeah, Kane, yes.
Has he ever said no to anything? Because I don't know if he has.
I would love to know angles he has said no. No, my character wouldn't go that far.
He's done some really...
That's just too much.
Ridiculous things.
So he spouts off his poem. He says he is not afraid of the Undertaker. And the lights go out, the gong plays, and pyro goes off, and the ring begins to levitate.
Yeah. Did it actually? Did they actually, what? I didn't notice that.
The ring was moving. It was diagonal.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Supernatural forces at work here. Yeah. This was the line being crossed. Mm-hmm. So the Undertaker was returning here. They had not seen him since the Survivor Series, where he did a Buried Alive match with Vince McMahon and was buried.
And he was still working the biker gimmick.
He was doing the biker gimmick, yep. And this was the long return that they had teased, where he was coming back as the Dead Man here at WrestleMania. And they did not put him on TV before WrestleMania. That was the draw. You have to pay to see his return.
And I think the segment achieved that very well. It didn't show Taker. It showed him on video and basically promised that if you paid for the show, you will see The Undertaker reprise his old gimmick.
Yeah, you would get to see him in his the old look. Yeah. That was a big key drawing point. And
absolutely.
I think, in a way, it seems that they're going to do that this year with not revealing his hair.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof, which I don't know if that's a mistake or not.
From what I hear, he's not completely bald, but you know, wearing like a short cropped crew cut type of thing.
I just hope that it's not so glaring that it's going to be what everyone is focused on for the match, it's a distraction.
I think they should go all out. They should dye it blonde, put highlights in there, and just,
like, it's one thing when he had the short hair and he was the biker. It's another where he's the Dead Man and he's bald or has a crew cut.
Yeah, they'll make it work. And I think people will be willing to not necessarily pay $50 just to see this, but as an added incentive, I think people will be curious.
I would leave that as the visual at the end of your Raw going into it.
Maybe he keeps like a bandana on for the entire match, and like at the end of the match, if he wins, he'll take it off. No?
Maybe he'll wear the Kurt Angle
headgear
when he got shaved.
Totally. Okay.
They plug This Is Your Life coming up later. And then our first matchup of the night is a eight-man tag. Mark Jindrak.
Oh, six. Oh, yeah, you know, you're right.
We have also got to mention we've got a guest coming up on today's show.
Yes, I can't believe we forgot.
Lance Storm will be joining us later on in the show to discuss his role, or lack thereof, at WrestleMania this year. He was almost put on the card, and then at the last minute was not put on the card, but did still have some involvement behind the scenes with the show.
Yeah, he was supposed to be, Lance tells us, he was supposed to be involved in this tag team feud on Raw, and actually, on the DVD, there's a bonus match because these teams have to qualify to enter this tag team tournament. And Lance, and who was teaming with Val Venus at the time, they do have a match on that DVD facing, I believe, the Dudleys.
Yes.
Who won, of course, to qualify for this WrestleMania.
Yeah, it was a four-way tag that was getting set up for WrestleMania. And, yeah, they ended up going with Jindrak and Cade as the final team to put in over Lance and Chief Morley.
Chief Morley, yes.
So Lance will talk more about that coming up in our interview later on following this review. So we got Mark Jindrak, Garrison Cade, Rene Dupree, and Rob Conway. Gone, 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 and gone, taking on Booker T, Rob Van Dam, and the Dudley Boys. One surviving member of these eight, and he's a commentator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's been a while.
Booker and Van Dam at this time are the Raw Tag Team Champions, and the other three teams will be challenging for the titles at WrestleMania. And as Wayne mentioned, the Dudleys have beat Storm and Val on Sunday Night Heat. Bubba comes in first, tags to Van Dam, who hits the Rolling Thunder on Dupree, and then Van Dam is sent shoulder first into the post, tags in Cade, and they get the heat on Van Dam. Van Dam comes back with a spinning wheel kick to Jindrak, and then tags in Booker. Booker hits the bookend to Jindrak, but then everybody runs in, and they all end up retreating to the floor fighting. Booker goes for a scissors kick, but he runs into Dupree on the apron, who hits an elbow to Booker, and this leads to Jindrak getting the pin on Booker. 4 minutes and 10 seconds, and then the heels argue after the match about who led to the victory. So we had the Jindrak, Cade, Dupree, and Conway all arguing, and you can catch these four teams in action challenging Booker and Van Dam for the tag titles.
I thought... all these teams were just so bland, especially Jindrak and Cade. I don't know anything about them, even to this day. They just looked like the most generic creative wrestler types that you could imagine. Even Jindrak's like, he's got some shitty clothesline finish. Like, even that's a generic finish. I just couldn't really get into this match, the Mania match, I mean, because I just had no vested interest in any of these teams.
No, it wasn't a match that was selling a buy at WrestleMania. It was just kind of, let's throw everybody out there for 4 minutes, and that was that. Not a whole lot of interest for this match coming up. Chris Jericho's on the phone with Trish Stratus in the back, and she was attending physical therapy after Christian had beat her down in a recent angle. And Jericho promises to beat Christian at WrestleMania and says, yeah, take him downtown to Chinatown.
Yeah, he said that. So what exactly was happening with this angle? How did Chris Jericho and Trish end up being a couple?
Well, it had begun with Jericho and Christian as the heels.
Mm-hmm.
Remember doing that bet for a Canadian loony?
Yes.
To try and see who could fuck which girl first?
Yes, who? Whether Christian could
land Lita?
Yes.
Or Jericho could land Trish. And Trish fell for Jericho and then found out about the bet. But then Jericho professed his love for her and they became an actual couple here. How sweet.
Yeah, so somehow along the way, Jericho...
This was a good angle. It was very good at the time.
Jericho developed legit feelings for Trish, and thus we are in this scenario.
Yes, and Christian had recently attacked Trish, and in this instance, Christian comes up from behind Jericho and attacks Jericho, and then he gets on the phone, says something to Trish here, and
threatens her, basically.
He has just left Jericho in a familiar position that Trish would be accustomed to, flat on his back.
Ooh. Okay, so then Christian runs away.
He runs out of the building into a car and drives off in the snow.
Yes. Yeah, I thought they were both good. Christian and Jericho, they always deliver. Absolutely.
Speaking of delivery.
Oh, yes.
Ross and Lawler are at the announce desk, and a pizza arrives with a WrestleMania 20 commemorative box. Nothing says subtlety like WWE promotion.
They
didn't even mention the company doing this.
No, they just...
It was Domino's or who?
A pizza just showed up.
It was just pizza in a WrestleMania 20 box.
Yeah.
That's a collector's item.
Oh, yeah. This crusty, oily box. If somebody kept this, it'll be worth millions.
It's like WWF shampoo from 1987.
Yeah, which you have a bottle of.
Someone at work was at some vintage store or something, and there was a bottle of WWF shampoo. And this person at work bought this and gave it to me, and it sits at my desk.
Likely toxic after
26-year-old shampoo.
Wow.
Disgusting. Then Todd Grisham This was Todd Grisham's debut.
No way.
Debut
this,
night.
This episode.
For WWE.
Okay.
He's with Booker and Van Damme, and he asks them, is it an omen that Mark Jindrak pinned you tonight, Booker? And Booker says that, let me tell you about Jindrak and Cage. Nothing will stop them at WrestleMania. That's all he said. And Van Damme, I guess he was a mute during this time. He just stared at the camera, did his pose, and walked off after Booker talked.
These, a lot of these
goofy
backstage segments are just so bad, so obviously written, and written to the point where you reduce these characters to their absolute most basic form. I mean, none of these guys use any of their mic time to say anything aside from their catchphrases. Nothing of substance whatsoever.
I thought Raw, particularly from, I would say, the brand extension up until when Benoit wins the title, it was a really bad show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 7 times out of 10. They would have the odd occasional moments, but it was generally, I think, a real bad time period. And
in contrast to SmackDown, especially.
Yes. And it really turned around in 2004 because you were having dynamite matches after WrestleMania with you know, Benoit, Hunter, Michaels, Orton.
Mm-hmm.
There was some great stuff. But up until this point, I mean, this kind of characterized it. A lot of just bad writing, bad promos, you know, tag matches like we just saw in that 8-man tag. That was, you got so much of that, and it's like, it wasn't this glory period here in 02-03 on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
The Rock is backstage. Oh, first they showed highlights of This Is Your Life from September of 99. This was the infamous segment that did an 8.4 quarter hour. Not the highest in Raw's history, as they always like to promote. But
what is the highest?
The highest was a match between Steve Austin and The Undertaker from June of 99 that did over a 9. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why they don't promote. It's a higher number. Why don't you promote that? I guess because this is, it's got a better story behind it about this was a infamous This Is Your Life segment with Rock.
You never ever hear about that.
They never
Austin
talk about it. And it is legitimate. In the Raw, the history of Raw, that is the highest rated quarter hour. And this would be number two, I believe. The Rock is backstage with a Diet Pepsi, stealing Punk's gimmick.
Right. Yes.
And he just is like this random man in the back by himself, yelling, this is your life, and yelled, baby, a number of times.
No.
He's just this guy that yells randomly.
Well, he's full of electricity.
I guess so.
He's the most electrifying man. Yeah.
Is someone going to unplug the most electrifying man,
mm-hmm.
like Big Show? He walks into the Hurricane and Rosie. It brings up their 2003 match where Hurricane pinned Rock, which was only a year before this. And Rock says, no, you beat the Scorpion King, not the Rock. And Hurricane and Rosie say that they saw a preview of Walking Tall, his movie coming out shortly, and thought it was great. But Rosie got lost in the theater and ended up watching Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen.
Ugh.
He calls them Hamburglar and Grimace. And then Jonathan Coachman walks in, as Hurricane insinuates that Rock and Coachman look alike. Coach says, you know, Rock, if you work harder, you could be a double for me. And Rock makes fun of Coach, as well as Eric Bischoff, and then shoves Coach away. And that was our backstage interaction with Rosie, Hurricane, and The Rock.
I found The Rock really annoying. Really annoying in this entire episode. He's just he's just this guy who's just so spastic and so full of like too much energy, and you just—it's.
Well, I think a lot of people like that. Remember, they had not seen Babyface Rock in a long time here.
Well, I have seen Babyface Rock, I guess, over the past month, and I just—I like the current incarnation of The Rock much better than what this was.
Is it that different?
Yeah, I think so. At least, I mean, The Rock that we have today, at least, you know, is able to have some wit in his humor, in his comedy, and he actually, like, you know, like he does things like he that promo from 2 weeks ago where he was like singing a song in that with Christopher Columbus and all that stuff was I found a lot more controlled and a lot more well paced, whereas this Rock was just kind of blathering and just, you know, shouting catchphrases and shit off the top of his head.
Not to get too off topic, but I was thinking about this over the weekend. If the amount of buys for WrestleMania, I mean, they're targeting, you know, this could be the biggest Mania of all time. And I think anything 1.1 and above has to be considered very good. If this pay-per-view comes in at something like 900,000 buys, mm-hmm. it's a disappointment. What would you attribute it to?
I would attribute it to just the overall cooling of the product. Like, not.
I think it's going to be brought up, the fact that throughout this build for Rock and Cena, they've really gone out of the way with Cena and his lines. It's like pointing out all these flaws about The Rock. And it feels that is what a lot of people are echoing now, that The Rock is not that cool anymore. His promos are too contrived. Yeah.
But I don't think that'll ever stop anybody from paying for the show.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you know, this is all hypothetical. Maybe this pay-per-view is going to be through the roof. But I just think a lot of people are going to point fingers if it's not a successful number. And I think it ultimately comes down to Rock and Cena. Yeah. That's the draw. Okay. And if it doesn't do well, it falls down. Something did not work then for that build.
For me, like, it's Rock and Cena is not the only draw. It's the Hell in a Cell. It's Jericho and Punk. It's really those three matches.
And yeah, but I think the majority, it's Cena Rock. I mean, they're going to, I think, account for like 70% of the people watching this show.
But those people aren't the people that are watching the show week to week.
That's true.
So they aren't necessarily hearing what Cena's saying about The Rock. I feel like if the casual fan is not going to buy the show, it's because they just don't think The Rock and John Cena is that big of a deal to begin with.
Yeah. I think the best part of Rock Cena is that every segment they do together, it feels uncomfortable. Like that these two legitimately do not get along with each other. And mm-hmm. if that's ramped up, I think it works great. It feels like a real issue that they have, and it's not a storyline. Yeah. And I think that's great. I think that's something you rarely get in wrestling today.
I think they just need to boil that down to the feud and not kind of, you know,
sing.
Sure. Or just get distracted by way of too many personal insults.
Yeah. You don't want to get off into where you're just trying to pop the guys in the back. Yeah. This has to be, okay, I want to see these two fight and not just get these stupid jabs.
Exactly.
Like, you're a bad promo. Mm-hmm. That does no one any. Well, why do I give a fuck about these guys? Yeah. All right, tangent number one, done. We go on to Randy Orton, Ric Flair, and Batista. Ric Flair was working at this point with a broken neck.
Was he? Wow.
This man's a machine.
Yeah.
This was 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Taking on the Hurricane and Rosie.
Superhero in training.
Yes. Hurricane delivers a back body drop to the neck-ridden Ric Flair. Flair comes back with a suplex and works on the leg of Hurricane as Orton comes in. Batista comes in, hits a spine buster, knocks Rosie to the floor, and then hits a Batista bomb to Hurricane for the win. This only went a minute 25, simply to showcase Evolution. Heels then beat down on Rosie after the match. Batista hits a spine buster to Rosie, and then Orton gets on the mic and cuts a promo saying, "This is your life," and calls Foley and Rock. They're going to have two pathetic comebacks, met with pain and embarrassment this Sunday. And they were the two biggest names, but now we are the biggest names, and life changes. It's simply Evolution, and there's no stopping it. It's a very good promo.
I thought it was
This was when Orton was really on the rise.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really, even from this, it really seemed like this was a guy clearly on the cusp of reaching the main event, and he would do so later that year.
Yeah, I mean, that program he did with Mick Foley, it started in late 03 and then led up to that Backlash event after WrestleMania. It did so much for Orton. Mm-hmm. They recap Benoit and Michaels teaming up the prior week on Raw against Orton and Batista and not getting along. Michaels landed on Benoit by accident as Benoit had the crossface applied, and then Benoit headbutted Michaels during a pin attempt, and then they start to fight. Hunter would attack them and lay out both with the pedigree. They promote TV Guide, which has dueling covers with Hunter, Michaels, and Benoit on one TV Guide, and Angle and Eddie on the other TV Guide. Collector's items.
I know, like, I mean, you and I, like, we've been known to to be nerds about certain things, and we've been known to collect some very nerdy things, but...
TV Guide?
Collecting TV Guide variant covers is a whole another level of just sadness. Who are these people that collect different issues of TV Guide?
Okay, well, I'm going to take partial responsibility here. Not that I collected this, but when I left Fan Access in 2002, they were giving them out.
Okay.
And I did take one.
You took one. You don't have a collection.
No, I would have.
You don't have.
I guess they only
multiple covers of the same week's TV Guide simply because they're different.
Dude, there's tons of collectors out there who I'm sure have every year because they've done this TV Guide thing for years and years.
Yeah, I know.
Who buys TV Guide period these days? I mean, talk about an industry that was made obsolete by a button on your remote.
Uh huh. Yeah.
TV Guide just became really irrelevant. When they started adding, like, digital channels and stuff, I remember TV Guide, like, they just didn't have the space to list all the channels. It's like, you're not even what you're advertising anymore. You're not even good at your sole focus here of listing every channel and what's on.
TV Guide is really obsolete, aside from the website, I suppose. I mean, the brand TV Guide itself, if you don't know anything, if you don't own digital cable, which I don't know how many people don't.
Can you possibly not have a box? In this day and age?
Not in Toronto, I don't believe. I think you can have analog cable. You don't need digital cable.
Oh, God.
Analog
and you
cable.
Can have your 1985 calendar, too.
Well, TV Guide collectors, they are out there. And if you are one of them, I apologize.
Matt Hardy comes out to his Windows Media Player entrance, speaking of dated technology.
Yes. These days, I suppose it would be what? Like some iPad?
Illegal stream.
Okay, right. And the Matt fact for this week?
He had two. Oh. He never irons his clothes, and he occasionally cheats on his diet.
Yeah.
Definitely ripe for a joke a couple years later.
Yeah.
Chris Benoit and Matt Hardy is our match. Benoit decks him, suplex, then another snap suplex. Benoit chases him outside and then back in as Hardy gets a bit of offense in, but Benoit then counters a bulldog into a series of three German suplexes, and then on the third attempt, transitions into the crossface, minute 40, clean win. This was when Hardy was a heel and very low on the totem pole
of
WWE.
But basic booking to make the contender look strong, and it's really the type of appearance you want for a challenger heading into a pay-per-view. At this point, was the plan always to give Benoit the title?
Yes, I believe so.
Even up until now?
Yeah, even though the April pay-per-view was in Edmonton, I believe the plan, it was always Benoit winning the title.
And why did they decide to put Michaels into the feud?
He just didn't have a spot for WrestleMania. I mean, it'd be a better match probably with the three of them. Michaels was in that main event picture. They were actually discussing making that a ladder match at WrestleMania,
really?
And then went against it. Jim Ross comes down to the ring to interview Benoit. Says that Benoit's had a great career, but it all comes down to this Sunday, and that it's taken 18 years to get to this point. And it will be defined in one... I'm sorry, reading this back, this is so horrible in context. His career will be defined by one night with two of the greatest stars ever and could win the title. And Benoit goes to discuss, and Michaels comes out, interrupts him. Michaels puts Benoit over, says he respects him, but he's trying to end a near 10-year grudge with Triple H. This really been 10 years?
By this
Hunter
point,
began with the company in 95.
Yeah.
And
maybe they knew
they formed DX in 97.
Okay. Well, maybe some backstage thing.
All right.
Yeah.
And he says that he can end this grudge by winning the title, and they can both agree that they want Hunter to lose the title. And Michael says good luck. They reluctantly shake hands and have a stare down. And then Triple H comes out, and an hour later, finished. He says how he's so happy that they can agree on things. And he agrees with anyone that thinks this is all a bunch of crap. And he is upset that these two are agreeing to make a pact that Hunter will not leave with the title. He calls himself the best that there is. And he always has an edge. And he's going to have an edge over Benoit and Michaels because of their egos.
God, just stop. I know you're trying your best to be concise about a Triple H promo, but this one was just so long and so boring. It just takes forever to get to his point, and it just comes across like a guy who just loves the sound of his own voice.
Not a great promo in any sense here.
No.
And that, to me, really separated Hunter from being one of those top guys for the company. Was just not cutting. I mean, his promos today are significantly better.
It depends on who he's there with. And I think as somebody who reacts to somebody else, he's a better promo. But somebody who's actually leading the segment, and especially when he's there by himself, I find him dreadful, even today.
Watching this Raw as well, this title match was not positioned as the main event. I mean, you watch this, the Rock Foley Evolution match, that's positioned as the main event.
Yeah, but, you know, I sense that's because it's the Rock and it's only his second week back, right? And
yeah, but I think the Rock was probably the biggest draw at that WrestleMania.
Could be, yeah. More so than what we had last.
Goldberg and Lesnar. I mean, it was just, there was a bunch of big matches. I mean, they had the two title matches. They had Lesnar-Goldberg. They had the Rock match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had the four-way tag match.
See, the reason why I ask whether or not the plan was always for Benoit to get the title, even after Michael's inclusion, was because I felt the build for this match to be kind of odd, because here you have two baby faces with two different motivations for winning. Benoit winning, you know, trying to win his first title, and you have here a side story with Michaels wanting to beat Hunter, and you know that's fine, but it's odd for it's an odd dynamic for a main event, because it basically stacks the odds against your heel, which I don't think is what you want. I think you want your baby faces to overcome a challenge. This basically guarantees that Hunter will lose. So I found that to be an odd dynamic to get behind. But I was always a fan of the work rate that these three would deliver.
Yeah, it was almost like the underlying theme was that Benoit was always this great worker, but he was never going to be a champion in the WWE at that level. And that was kind of the push that, you know, suddenly here he is in the main event of WrestleMania. And I think going into it, no one believed this guy was actually going to win the title.
Mm-hmm.
But that was always kind of their direction at the time. Mick Foley's walking the back, walks into Spike Dudley, says he's a bit nervous because he's got some skeletons in the closet. And what if The Rock has found those skeletons? Said this all in a sarcastic tone, though. Lita against Molly Holly. Molly tore out part of Victoria's hair last week on Raw, and that led to the announcement of a title versus hair match at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You tore my hair? I will shave your head.
Sure. That makes sense.
Molly attacks Lita, hits a backbreaker. Lita hits a Hurricane Rana, one-legged monkey flip into mid-ring. And Lawler says how he misses Lita's old thong that she used to wear.
Thank you. Thank you, Jerry Lawler.
Lita hits a twist of fate for a near fall, goes for another one, but Molly counters it with a roll-up and grabs the ropes for the win at 2:22. And then Molly tries to tear at Lita's hair as Victoria runs in, sends her to the floor, and Victoria just makes a head-shaving motion towards Molly for a prolonged period of time, just so you got it in your head that she was going to shave Molly's head at WrestleMania.
Very nice. Tattoo plays in the background. And I've forgotten.
Oh, yeah. Tattoo. All the things she said.
Yes, that's it.
They show highlights from Raw last week with Austin almost running McMahon over with an ATV. See how they shot this? Where Vince literally had to dodge this ATV from like a foot in front of him.
I didn't notice how close he was. But
it was not a lot of margin for error on this one. And then Austin drove the ATV on top of McMahon's limo as McMahon freaked out.
And there was a camera somehow inside the limo to capture
him. If I was Austin, I would not be doing this. I was like, nah. You can get a stunt guy to try this.
It might have been a stunt guy.
I doubt it.
Okay.
They weren't high on stunt people.
They are stuntmen, actually. Christ. They're stuntmen who don't really know how to do stunts.
You're going to take this ATV, and you're going to get onto two wheels, get on top of a limo, and drive on top.
They should have got Paul Azenby to do this.
Paul should have been called for this. They recap the Goldberg-Lesnar feud stemming from the Royal Rumble. And then Lesnar interfering in the Rumble, leading to Kurt Angle eliminating Goldberg. Then Goldberg showing up at No Way Out, which we reviewed a while back. after he showed up with a ticket to attack Lesnar. Vince then announced that no one can keep these two under control and made Austin the guest referee. And then they did a warm-up. The prior week on Raw, they did Vince McMahon against Eric Bischoff. This was on Raw the prior week.
Yeah, I don't remember that match.
Was exactly. That's a giant issue.
Was there anything to it? Like,
I don't know. No? I don't remember it either. But Vince versus Eric, free on TV, and I bet most people assume they never had a match together. Yeah. And it led to Lesnar delivering an F5 during that match and then stole his ATV and mocked Austin by drinking his beer. So we cut back here, and Austin comes out to the ring, drinks a beer. He says he's been speared, and he's taken an F5. So I don't care about either guy, and I'm going to call it down the middle. He does the what routine with the audience, and he says he's going to Atlantic City for SmackDown this week to do some drinking and gambling and to get his ATV back from Brock Lesnar. And there isn't anyone in that locker room who can stop him.
Well, yeah. Short, simple promo from Austin telling you to watch SmackDown.
The real star of this match, Steve Austin. The really? One of the three that would be around the next Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to Chris Jericho against Steven Richards, who got his own entrance, and his soundbite at the top of his entrance video was, "I'll show you, you'll see." And then it went into an instrumental theme.
No, that's his catchphrase.
"I'll show you, you'll see."
Yeah. He has his tights read Stevie Knight Heat with the Heat logo.
Yeah.
Do you notice that?
Yeah. So a rarity for this man to get on Raw.
Yeah. Not only a rarity for him to get on Raw, but wow, this was perhaps the highlight of his WWE career.
This was bragging rights for the next year on Heat.
Yeah.
Jericho attacks him at the bell with a knee to the head and chop, hits a running clothesline, and even bit Richards. And then Richards cuts him off with a kick to the gut, works over the left arm. Richards gets draped on the ropes, and Jericho hits a running leg and then a face plant, but misses the lion salt landing on his feet. Jericho goes for the Walls of Jericho, but Trish's music hits. But instead, Christian walks out, and this distracts Jericho. Richards, with an inside cradle, pins Jericho 2.5 minutes, and Jericho is pissed afterwards. Hits a baseball slide to Richards after the match, attacks him on the floor, and then tosses him into the steps. How dare you capitalize on this distraction, Stevie?
Yes.
Stevie.
I never thought I would ever see Steven Richards get a win over Chris Jericho, clean or not, especially on Raw, but we saw it here, and I think this just goes to say, it says something about somebody like Chris Jericho, who's willing to take a loss to Stevie Richards if it meant, prolonging and adding to a feud.
This was the first year they had brought back the WWE Hall of Fame. They had kind of stopped doing it after 96, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So they were bringing it back here, and we got a video with all the inductees for this year with this Zen music in the background.
Mm-hmm. And how many inductees did we have?
We had Jesse Ventura, Harley Race, Superstar Billy Graham, Tito Santana, Sergeant Slaughter, Bobby Heenan, Don Morocco, Greg Valentine, Big John Studd, Junkyard Dog, and Pete Rose.
11 inductees in this one year.
Big year.
Yeah, I wonder how long the ceremony went.
It was supposed to be 12, actually, because Bob Backlund was going to be going in.
Uh-huh.
But he was so disgusted that they would induct Pete Rose to this Hall of Fame that he withdrew his candidacy.
Oh, wait till he saw some of the inductees in later years. So, Drew Carey is in this Hall of
Drew
Fame.
Drew Carey. Well, come on, everyone. It's the WWE Hall of Fame. It is what it is. So they play the our theme music for WrestleMania way, Step Up by Drowning Pool. The new, the newly formed Drowning Pool after their lead singer had died a few years prior.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a new version.
Yeah.
Step Up from the Punisher soundtrack featuring Kevin Nash.
Oh, yes.
Stacy, oh, this segment. Fuck, was this bad. Stacy Keibler and Jackie Gata walk into Eric Bischoff's office, but he's not there. And Keibler is excited for WrestleMania, cannot wait to get their hands on Sable and Torrie Wilson, and they start singing Milkshake.
Oh, man.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard.
They don't start singing. They reference the song. I don't even want to.
This was bad white girls singing and dancing.
This, well, not only that, this was somebody writing this on from pen to paper. The idea that somebody actually wrote this into a script and handed it off to somebody, made copies of this even, handed it off to various people to read, is baffling.
Then Johnny Spade walks in, the future John Morrison, introduces himself and gives the ladies his card, says, "I'm a star maker." And he was Eric Bischoff's assistant at the time. The women thank him for the card, they leave, and then Eric Bischoff is just there, all of a sudden. He just appears in this room. I don't know where the girls did not see him in this room, but he had been off to the side and just walked into the shot. He's
probably hiding behind the couch or a desk.
In a bathroom that we did not see. And Bischoff is impressed with Johnny Spade.
Johnny Spade, yes, this is even before he was renamed Johnny Nitro. And later, John Morrison, of course. But, wow, was this his first appearance since Tough Enough?
No, they had had him on a few weeks, and each week they had given him a different name.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they went through a bunch of names.
Johnny Spade, okay.
Then Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross run down all of the Raw matches for WrestleMania, and then they throw to Michael Cole and Taz at WWE Studios with the SmackDown lineup, and they cut a promo on how the SmackDown talent is coming for Raw with three interpromotional matches, which they plug. And those interpromotional matches, Way, we have Keebler and Gata against Sable and Torrey. We had Goldberg against Lesnar. And there was another one in there as well. Undertaker and Kane.
Yes.
That was the other interpromotional match. They show The Rock walking in the back, again by himself, just yelling, "We are live!
Uh-huh.
We're live! I'm live! I'm alone! I'm live!" And Lawler, as they go to break, calls it Vintage Rock.
This was some vintage stuff. Yeah.
This was our final segment. The final impression they were going to make on this audience for WrestleMania.
This is the main event.
Rock comes out and says how Evolution has led to Mick Foley not having fun lately. So tonight we're going to make Mick Foley smile. That's the goal of tonight, to make Mick smile. And Foley comes out. Rock says that WrestleMania is in 6 days, but tonight it's This Is Your Life. Don't worry about that show. That's 6 days away. This is now. We're live. And confetti comes down from the rafters. And they air a home video of Mick jumping off his roof from the infamous video they aired on Raw years ago. And they bring out Doris Snyder, whose house he jumped off of. And they talk about how Foley used to eat her pie. And Foley says, well, all the kids ate her pie. Girls, stray dogs. But it was a bit crusty. But it was always the front door. She provided this pie.
Yes.
And she left the back door open for strudel. Ha! Next, they air a clip from October the 17th of 1983 with Mick Foley at ringside for Jimmy Snuka and Don Morocco. And they even highlight Foley in the crowd. And they bring out Jimmy Snuka, who got a very good reaction here. This was, I mean, he was not at this point where they brought the legends back so many times. But in this case, I mean, this was a nice surprise. And Foley says he would not be in this ring if it wasn't for Snuka. And he asks Snuka if he'll be at MSG this Sunday. And he replies, "Boss, it would be great pleasure." Rock makes fun of his promos, how no one ever knew what you were talking about, but they knew you were going to kick ass. And then Doris is checking out Snuka. And Snuka says, "I love pie." And they send the two off to a Holiday Inn to create Tamina.
Oh, man. Yes.
Who is adopted. They show Foley's first book on the screen, and Rock brings out Mick Foley's first critic, Bob Thompson. Foley says, "This guy gave me a terrible review. He called wrestling and wrestling fans idiots." Which, for fans watching this segment, How could they possibly believe that? Rock brought him out to show that the critics are wrong. And he says, the critics say that they cannot beat Evolution on Sunday. And Thompson gets on the mic and says, if you showed your passion like this in Walking Tall, it wouldn't be a walking piece of crap. This movie had not come out yet, mind you. And Foley pulls out his sock, applies it on Thompson, and says, this is the story of his life, and the final chapter will be written on Sunday. Rock does his catchphrase, but Batista runs in and attacks Rock, sends him to the floor, fights with Foley. Orton comes in along with Ric Flair, and they beat down Foley. Rock makes his comeback. Rock then blocks an RKO, goes for the Rock Bottom, but Batista cuts him off, and it ends with a Batista bomb to Rock and leaves both Foley and Rock laying as Evolution leaves to their theme. And Ross does another great send-off here for the go-home show, and at least they got it right in terms of Rock and Foley being laid out. I thought they were going to just make their comeback here and lay out Evolution, which would have been terrible. But, yeah, not a big fan of this. This is your life. I mean, the last 2 minutes, they tried to get heat on the match, but...
I thought this segment was just such a dud. It kept dragging. I mean, tone-wise, it totally matched up with the original This Is Your Life. Fine, yeah, that's great. But is that what you want on your go-home edition of Raw right before WrestleMania? Is this selling the pay-per-view to anybody? Is this making anybody want to watch this match? Where is the rivalry between these two and Evolution? Where did you explain that? Where did you explain the importance of winning this match for you? Instead, you're using this time to devote to pie innuendos.
This was one of the byproducts I found of the Monday Night Wars, where we would get more into segments like this that would get away from promoting pay-per-views, especially in key segments, and instead we would do concerts and... celebration segments, and This Is Your Life. And to me, this, it was like, well, it's going to be entertaining. And you know what? If fans enjoyed this, that's great. But I don't think you leave a show and say, well, I'm going to watch WrestleMania now because, God damn it, The Rock is just so funny. He's so entertaining. Mm-hmm. I love those dick jokes. And the sexual innuendo is just hit such a great chord with me that I want to see this man fight. So absolutely. To me, this was a segment we could have done weeks prior, not on the go-home show, in the final segment before WrestleMania.
And if you didn't have The Rock for those previous weeks, then don't do this segment.
No.
Save it for after the show.
I wanted Mick Foley cutting a big promo on Randy Orton, how you've tried to ruin my career. You've made my life miserable for the last 4 months, and at Madison Square Garden in the biggest match of your career, I'm going to fuck you up, bitch.
Wow.
Buys, way. That's how you sell pay-per-views.
Here's my money, John. I'm handing John $60 right here.
I want Foley versus Orton. Pollock versus Ting. This is how people win. Win interest in people. Conflict.
Yes. Okay. I did not like this show. I thought this episode of Raw did not serve its purpose.
No, I think the big go-home show from the clips I saw was the prior week. It seemed like that was all the big stuff that they did the prior week.
I mean, either that or SmackDown, because SmackDown was still of significance at this time with half the brand all the Lesnar and Goldberg build would still be taking place in SmackDown, plus you had the Eddie match. I thought the strongest stuff here was probably the Benoit and Michaels and Triple H segment, and even that was not that great, in my opinion. So, did not get me excited for WrestleMania, but we'll be watching it anyway.
All right, we're going to transition over now to our interview we conducted earlier with Lance Storm. And Lance is going to be a part of WrestleMania weekend. He's going to be competing against Mike Bennett on the Ring of Honor Showdown in the Sun Night 1 Internet Pay-Per-View. It's happening Friday, March the 30th at GFL.TV. You can check out that. It's only $14.95 for the show, or you can get both shows, the Friday and Saturday night, for $19.95. So, one of many, many events going on during WrestleMania weekend. So here is a portion of our interview of Lance chatting about the build-up for WrestleMania 20, his involvement, and a lot more. So here is Lance Storm on Review Away. This week we're taking a look back at WrestleMania 20 from 2004, a show that you were not a part of, and I just wanted to, because I know you've written about this on your website over there at stormwrestling.com, and I just wanted to get a sense from you, kind of your mindset going into that show, and if it was, I mean, were you being left off that show? I mean, was that kind of an impetus behind the transition over to Ohio Valley, or was one kind of separate from the other?
I'm beginning to think you may have read my book Stormfront, available on Amazon.com, because I talk about it quite extensively in that. It really was, in that I really thought Val Venus and I should have gotten the spot that Jindrak and Cade got. Just that it really was there's one more spot, who do we stick in it? And I thought Val and I, as senior guys, better workers, deserve the spot and the payday to go with it. And when we didn't get it, I really... It was one of the switches that went in my head going, okay, this creative team really isn't putting a whole lot of thought into me. It's really to the point where I really need to look into something that's going to be more rewarding than just being an insignificant part of this show. I could probably be a bigger significant part of this show working with the new guys and hopefully making the show better in that regard than really wasting my time with no focus from the creative team. So it was one of probably three or four factors that, you know, clicked that switch in my head going, they're really not going to do anything with me. I could probably be more productive in another role. So it wasn't too long after that I started looking into the possibilities of another role. And I think that was the Molly Holly haircut match show.
Yes.
And I worked a lot with Fit the days going into that, putting that match together with him. And it was at that show, I think, that I started, when I realized that, okay, I need to look for something else. And I started talking to Fit about the possibility of working as an agent, which is what I approached the office with first, and then they pitched the idea of being a trainer instead. But that really was if not the exact turning point, was one of, inside of a month or so around that show, that I really started looking into other options.
Can you talk a little about, helping to put a match together for the women, especially in the context of a pay-per-view as big of as WrestleMania, where, you know, really the women's matches are not the draw, and in often cases they are put as a buffer in between some other matches. With the limitations that you are being given, what is the difference in working with the women versus the men?
Well, the thing is, especially because I think it was Victoria and Molly for that one, both of the girls really, you know, had a lot of respect for the job and wanted to be good at it. So we didn't look at it, and again, any of the girls of that era were like that. But, you know, we didn't look at it whether they were going to be a buffer match or not, because regardless of that, you want to go out and still put on the best performance you can. And Fit was incredibly awesome. He usually had the basic idea and layout that they wanted. So I just went with him and, again, threw in ideas and stuff, but more than anything else, helped just demonstrate with him, you know, to help lay it out and give them an idea of what they were looking for. But we have always, you know, anytime I help the girls or anyone, I never looked at it as, okay, this is just a buffer match, it's not important. You still want to go out and do your job and improve and do as best you can. And, you know, the girls always work hard, so.
Do you have any recollections, Lance, of the infamous match on this show with Goldberg and Lesnar, where I think it had kind of gotten out a few days prior that not only Goldberg, but Lesnar as well were planning to leave after the show, and it made for, I was in the audience that night, and it was quite the audience to be a part of, as they seemed to just want to get on to both guys' case, and thankfully Austin was out there as, I think, the lone babyface out there, with the entire crowd going nuts here for these two guys that were clearly on their way out.
Yeah, they really did a whole lot of nothing starting out. And I think my biggest recollection was after the show was over, I had posted a commentary on my site, sort of just, you know, reviewing the show and mentioned how disappointed I was in that. And I think threw the comment out that I'd worked harder on indie shows for $50 than those two guys did at WrestleMania 20. And Steve Lombardi had read it and came up to me backstage on one of the shows right afterwards. And, you know, said that it was a really gutsy but a dumb thing to do and I should really take it down. He says, because, you know, those two guys are going to be back at some point. And I said to him, it's like, well, I don't care. I'll tell them that to their face. I said, I'm pretty sure they know it. And to be perfectly honest, I've always worked really hard. There was probably guys in much better matches than that I've worked equally as hard at for $50. So I stand by that thing today. And I've talked to both guys. I don't know if I talked to Brock since then, but I know I've talked to Bill since then, and Bill and I get along great, and he probably wouldn't deny it either, that he was, you know, this was my last match. He wanted to get the hell out. But yeah, it was not a good performance. So they, once they got into the finish, it started being halfway decent. But the first, I don't know how long it actually was, but it felt like the first 40 minutes was just nothing. It was probably 4 minutes, but it was not a WrestleMania Madison Square Garden main event by any stretch.
What was the mood like in the locker room when that news hit that this was to be Brock's last match? Did many people see it coming? And you know, were there people that were I guess angry towards somebody like Lesnar for suddenly leaving you know, so quickly?
I don't remember much of a reaction, but it was a case where I know the news broke to me during fan access, so you weren't all together. Because I think I found out, you know, standing in the hall, getting on an elevator with Fit, going to work with the girls, where Fit mentioned it to me. So it was never really, everybody found out at different times, so everyone had their reactions more individually. There wasn't a, you know, a big team meeting where they said, well, Brock's leaving, and everybody could, you know, react and discuss it. And with it being WrestleMania weekend, it's like, you know, everybody had their own work cut out for them. You know, if you were in a match at WrestleMania, you had bigger things to worry about than the fact that Brock was leaving. Mm-hmm. I think there was certainly a lot of people that were very disappointed that the company put so much stock into him, the amount of guys that put him over, and he's leaving. And especially considering with that being the last one, it's like, you know, he can't even, you know, put a few people over on his way out. He can put over a guy that's leaving too. So it was really a bad situation in that regard that both of them were leaving and couldn't put over guys that were staying.
The closing image of the show is obviously means something completely different today than it did in 2004. But in 2004, I mean, here we go off with Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero as your dual champions. I mean, did it feel at the time as almost like a shift in the company's focus at that time? Because I recall at the time, you know, this really was a statement against your prototypical top guy in the WWE at that point, and seemed like, you know, business wasn't the greatest at the time, and we're going in this different direction, and it did feel like something new at the time.
Yeah, it certainly did. It was certainly, and again, for me at least, it didn't really, I wasn't thinking so much about what it meant to the business. It was just, it's more just the emotional of, you know, here's two really good friends that struggled for so long together, getting to do it together. It was more, I felt that, you know, this is sort of a really, and it sounds like a weird word to use, but just a really sweet moment. That, you know, hey, these are, you know, two friends that worked so hard and traveled a very similar road. For them getting to celebrate together, it really seemed like that's a really nice moment. I never had the time to sit down and think, it's like, is this a significant change in the business or anything? I just thought it was a pretty cool moment that two friends got to share.
In your commentary, Lance, you mentioned that you did not watch the main event of this show in your review simply because you weren't feeling comfortable. Would you care to elaborate on that? Because to this day, amongst the fans at least, it is still a hotly contested debate about the treatment of Benoit's legacy and also the choices of people to watch or not watch the show. As somebody who is obviously a very close friend of Benoit's, can you explain your perspective?
Again, I have no problem if people want to watch, but I certainly have a real different perspective on the people that seem to think wrestling accomplishments trump murder.
Yeah.
You know, I was a friend of Chris's, but I'm a parent before I'm a friend, and I'm a human being before I'm a wrestler. And, you know, killing your wife and child trumps, boy, he had a really good snap suplex. So I can't separate the two as easily as other people seem to want to. And it's, again, knowing him like I did, again, we weren't super close, but, you know, over the last couple of years, he really helped me with my school getting started. And you know, I considered him a friend. And then it's really hard to wrap your brain and your heart around what happened. And it's just easier to lock it all away and not focus on it than try to, watch or enjoy one while trying to ignore the other. And I, you know, I get asked all the time on Twitter about Benoit, and I almost without exception ignore all questions because I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to have to deal with it. I don't think we're ever going to have answers at, you know, just such a horrible, horrible event. And again, when it comes to Hall of Fame and stuff, it's like, it's, oh, don't you think you should? It's like, no, if I was in charge, I wouldn't put him in. I wouldn't talk about him or promote him on TV either. I don't think you can. the everybody's like, well, it was just one weekend. It's like, well, it's a weekend that, you know, trumps a wrestling career, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Wrestling isn't the be all and end all of life.
Yeah. It's one of a horrific set of events that I just I, like many people, are just really don't care to talk about it anymore, because I mean, it's been 5 years by this point, and it's still something that, I mean, it's not going to erase anything, and there's people that are kind of set in their ways in regards to it. But as we wrap up here, Lance, why don't you just give us a quick heads up on what's going to be happening on WrestleMania weekend, because you're also going to be involved with the Fan Fest for those that are in Miami prior to the show on Friday.
Yeah, it's Ring of Honor Showdown in the Sun, March 30th and 31st of the two dates. There is a meet and greet, autograph signing, fan fest thing. I believe it starts at 2:00 in the afternoon on the Friday that I will be part of. Then the show in the evening, which I'll be wrestling Mike Bennett on. And then they have the 31st, which is an afternoon show. I don't know the exact time, but there is a fan fest autograph signing thing in the afternoon. Might even be late morning, depending on the time. That I am also a part of. I will not be wrestling on that show, but I will be signing autographs and doing the meet and greet stuff before I head down to Miami to attend the Hall of Fame. So if you're in the Miami, and again, Miami and Fort Lauderdale are literally, you know, minutes apart.
Yes.
So if you're flying into Miami going, crap, he's wrestling in Fort Lauderdale, it really is a hop, skip, and a jump. You can go up and watch him wrestle on the Friday or get autographs and so forth either on the Friday or Saturday. And if you frequent Cracker Barrels in the area, there's a good chance you'll be seeing me as well, because I plan on eating in as many as possible my 3 or 4 days in Florida.
Fantastic.
And then obviously I'll be at the Hall of Fame to watch my good buddy Edge get inducted, and I'm pretty happy about it. So
thank you once again to Lance Storm. You can get more information on him at stormwrestling.com. And again, he'll be taking on Mike Bennett Friday night, March the 30th in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, as part of their Showdown in the Sun iPay-per-view at GFL.tv. And the full interview we did with Lance, me and Wei chatted with him for about a half hour. That full interview will be up Thursday at liveaudiowrestling.com. So that was just a portion of the chat discussing WrestleMania 20. Always fun chatting with Lance.
Always.
Now we move over to your feedback here, and we'll start off with Mike Castellina. The most disappointing part of this Raw was us believing The Undertaker would return as he once was. Maybe a zombie-type-looking version, which led us to believe from Taker's face in the Titantron video. But what we got was a return of Biker Taker with a trench coat and hat. What? I think he's confusing time periods here. The Undertaker came back as the Dead Man here.
Yeah,
he did not come back with...
But he didn't look like he used to in 91.
I think what he means is he came back with... Yeah, he had the trench coat and he had like the MMA gloves.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was...
The character was the Dead Man character.
Yeah, it was much more Dead Man than it was the Biker. Especially with the torches and hearing Paul Bearer's voice before he came out, only to be let down when Taker appeared. All in all, I gave this Raw a 7 out of 10.
Kieran Roche, maybe it's the nostalgia of watching something from when I was a kid, but I really liked this Raw. I remember as a kid going crazy every time the Undertaker's gong would hit, and remember losing my mind when the ring moved. I love the promo between Michaels, Triple H, and Benoit, and the interaction between Rock, Hurricane, and the coach was pretty entertaining in my opinion. It might just be me, but I found Randy Orton much, much better here, as the arrogant heel than his current boring persona he has now. What I also found interesting was that Goldberg was excluded from this Raw, even though he was in one of the big matches on the pay-per-view, and then giving the guest ref for the match a promo instead. They must have been really pissed at him for leaving. All in all, I really like this Raw, 8 out of 10.
Yeah, that was interesting. They didn't have Goldberg on this show.
Yeah, but I thought that meant that... was he not on the SmackDown either?
I don't know for sure. I believe it was at the SmackDown tapings the next night that Lesnar informed them he was leaving.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Andrew Sheehy, I remember watching this episode of Raw as a pimply 14-year-old. The opening segment of the show with the ring moving like a surfboard during Kane's promo was freaky. The 8-man tag between the WrestleMania World Tag Title Match participants was decent. Handicap match made Evolution go into WrestleMania 20 that year strong in their lead-up to their match with Rock and Foley. The segment with Benoit, Michaels, and Triple H sold the World Title Match. I loved Christian's mind games to cost Jericho his match against Stevie Richards. Finally, the This Is Your Life segment with Foley and Rock to close the show was decent, but not as good as the first one in September of 99. Decent go-home Raw heading into WrestleMania 20, 7.5 out of 10. Please mention that this episode took place on the same night as the Todd Bertuzzi-Steve Moore incident on Wednesday's podcast. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Todd Bertuzzi came from behind Steve Moore and just like forearmed them in the back and broke his neck.
Oh, shit.
Nasty hockey incident.
All right.
Not sure how relevant it is to our podcast.
It is now.
It is violent.
Steve C. Carling, what a difference a deep talent pool makes. The show moves a lot faster and is that much more compelling with a lot more interesting people involved. I did order WrestleMania 20, but only because I'm a fan. It was a big show, and it was MSG, not because of the go-home show. Evolution's music was pretty bad, as was Jericho's acting and babyface promos. Was there ever a Downtown to Chinatown t-shirt?
No, there was not. How could you not enjoy Evolution's theme? I love that tune.
Yeah, it's one of the better themes.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
And finally, Johan Alfredsson. It's like night and day watching this and compare it to the Raw of today. Good pace in the program. The bad matches are still pretty good. And last but not least, Undertaker's awesome ring-moving powers. Never seen since that day. The only low was surprisingly The Rock, who was nice enough to remember us the whole night long that we are live. Was this some of his normal catchphrases or just something annoying he started with that day? Maybe I'm just feeling nostalgic because it was later that year that I started watching wrestling. Thanks for the show and greetings from Sweden. All right, well, thank you, Johan, for giving us your feedback there. So there we go, the go home Raw for WrestleMania 20. I would say this go home Raw, I wouldn't even say it was a double. It was a...
What do you mean a double?
In terms of, you know, the baseball analogy.
Oh.
Everyone says a home run. This was not even a double.
I didn't know we were doing baseball.
This was like a single, and then he was like picked off on first by the pitcher.
I'd say this would be a walk.
A walk.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. A walk with the Rock.
Oh, yes, there you go.
On that note, that's going to wrap it up, folks. We are going to be back next Wednesday with another edition of Review Away, our final one for Mania Month, as we are going to review WrestleMania 20 from Madison Square Garden. My good pal Brad Peck is going to join us in studio. He went to WrestleMania 20 with me, and then he went to WrestleMania 22 with myself and Way. Mm-hmm. So lots of great stuff we can chat about next week.
Yeah.
So leave your feedback during the week. We will post a thread up this weekend at reviewaway.com. We're moving over to the timeline in the next couple of weeks, folks. So, you know, the best I can tell is try and get used to it. I'm trying to acclimate. I'm playing around with it on the Lost site. It's by no means great, but I find the best format is that when you go to it and you have that drop-down menu and you can select posts by others, that seems to be the best layout. And then you can just see all the posts. I hate how they have posts from friends on there, and I'll get a post from you from like last November.
It makes no sense.
Why? I don't need that at all. I wish I could customize it more. I would like one column with law posts, and I want the other column with everybody else.
Uh-huh.
And it's not that bad at that point, but Christ. I don't know anyone that outside of Danny Powers that really loves this timeline, and it's been out for a number of months now.
I don't see how Danny Powers of all people could enjoy this because none of his photos get posted.
I love Danny Powers' photos, and yeah, you really have to go to the see all on that right column.
It's all bullshit.
Like look at this. I'm looking at a post from me here from December 11th of 2011. I don't care what I had to say in December of 2011. Christ, the timeline. Folks, just be patient. We're working on everything.
It is much better with a post by others chosen though.
Yes. Yeah, it's really much better. And one other note is that all those archives I did for Review Away did not make its way over to the new website. So I have one of our very talented interns is currently working on posting all of those archives up this week. So those should be up very shortly. Right now they're attached to the law. I had separated them all for everyone's convenience, and this website negated hours and hours of work. So I was not happy about that. But that's going to end us off. Let's not end on a completely down note. We'll have another show coming at you on Thursday, everyone. We're going to have an interview with former WWE creative member Brian Mann. Friday, we've got Review and Impact. And then this Sunday on The Law, Dolph Ziggler will join us for our final Law before WrestleMania 28. And then next week, me and Way are off to Miami. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, we'll be there and we'll be doing podcasts. Probably the entire weekend, keeping you updated on exactly what we find.
Maybe some surprise guests on the podcast, maybe.
Perhaps.
And
Vince McMahon.
Yes.
Be on the show.
God damn it.
Yes.
I love your reviews. So that's all for us, everyone. And do check out, we're doing a lot more videos online. This is me playing around with editing and just posting whatever. So.
What I love about, by the way, it is youtube.com/lawradio. And what I love about it is that this is basically John Pollock's playground. Because for the longest time, John has been, you know, you've been very curious about learning to edit video. And you've been asking me and whatnot. And now you get to do it, and you get to have, you know, hopefully an audience that can enjoy it. And John's been doing a great job.
Wow. I'm learning, folks. They're by no means waiting masterpieces. But,
but
check it out, youtube.com/lawradio. Every Thursday, me and Wei put up a new Ask Away video where we take your questions. And this week, we're going to pre-read all the questions and have some dynamite answers. And we're going to have a big surprise if you check out the video. I don't know what the surprise is going to be, but it's going to be huge.
I was like, are you sure? Well, you haven't told me what the surprise is.
Where are we going to go this week for Ask Away?
Oh, wow. We'll take.
We got to find a new location.
You know what? We'll take requests. How about that?
Okay, post up on the law, or sorry, on the Review Away Facebook page where we should go.
Yeah.
Because I hate doing it in this studio. It looks horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
people told us we looked 10 years younger in that video because there was sunshine.
Right, okay. Well, yes, you pick the location, and I only make the request that try to keep it quiet.
All right.
I can hear.
So that's coming up. Tons of stuff, everybody. And go to liveaudiowrestling.com, reviewaway.com, and you can follow Way at Way0937 and at Law Radio. We will chat with you later this week. Thanks a lot for listening to Review Away.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and their life is better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and their life is better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge.
You want it, the thing that makes me what the guys go crazy for. They lose their minds the way I run. I think it's time.
La 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 la.
Warm it up.
La 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 la.
The boys are waiting.
La 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 la.
Warm it up.
La 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 la.
The boys are waiting.
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and their life is better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and their life is better than yours. Damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, but I have to charge.
You're on it. You want me to teach thee techniques that breaks these bars. It can't be bought. Just let these get caught. Watch if you're smart.
La, 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 la.